Here on Radio 4 FM, it's our Book of the Week. In 2006, Peter Pomerantsev, born in Kiev, raised in England, the son of political exiles, moved to Moscow to work in the fast-growing television industry. Telling the stories of the subjects of his TV programmes, he traces the transformation of modern Russia from communist collapse to Putin's postmodern dictatorship. Justin Salinger reads, "Nothing is true and everything is possible."
The demolition ball keeps the time of the city, a metronome that swings on every corner. The city changes so fast, you lose all sense of reality. You can't recognise streets. Whole swathes of town are demolished in fits of self-destruction, wastelands abandoned for years and for no apparent reason, skyscrapers erupting before there are any roads leading to them, and then left standing empty in the dirty snow. The search for a style is psychotic. The first builds of the boom imitated whatever the post-Soviets had seen abroad and most desired. Turkish hotels, German castles, Swiss chalets. Behind high black gates peek out Disney-like towers tacked onto pink concrete castles, with rows of offices shaped like knights' helmets, so they look like an army of warriors emerging from the ground. Often you find all the styles compiled into one building. The effect is at first amusing, then disturbing. It's like talking to the victim of a multiple personality disorder. Who are you? What are you trying to say? Increasingly, new skyscrapers recall the Gothic turrets of Stalin-era architecture. Long before the city's political scientists started shouting that the Kremlin was building a new dictatorship, the architects were already whispering, "Look at this new architecture. It dreams of Stalin. Be warned, the evil empire is back." But the original Stalin-era skyscrapers were made of granite, with grand mosaics and Valhalla halls leading to small, ascetic flats. The new ones try to be domineering but come across as camp. Developers steal so much money during construction that even the most VIP, luxury, elite of the skyscrapers cracks and sinks ever so quickly. That unique Moscow mix of tackiness and menace. I can hear the groan and feel the shudders of the excavator before I even turn onto Gnezdnikovsky Alley, the air already filling up with clouds of red brick dust. An 18th century two-story building folds so easily, the clumsy arm of the excavator pulls down a wall awkwardly, like a toddler playing, revealing, for a moment, the innards of an old flat, the 1970s wallpaper, photographs, a radio, and then the demolition ball swings, and it's all gone for good. Gnezdnikovsky is just off Pushkin Square, what tourist guides describe as Moscow's historic centre. It should be untouchable, but the tremors of drill and demolition ball only become more frenzied with every metre closer you get to the Kremlin. Property prices are measured by distance from Red Square. The aim is to build your office or flat as close to the centre of power as possible. The market organised by a still feudal social structure defined by needing to be within touching distance of the Tsar, the General Secretary of the Communist Party, the President of the Russian Federation. This means the city is almost destined to destroy itself. It can't grow outwards, so every generation stamps on the heads of previous ones. A small crowd has gathered near the building site on Gnezdnikovsky. They put candles and flowers on the pavement in a little gesture of lament. These flash mobs, mourning the death of old Moscow, have become more frequent. Alexander Mozhaev stands at the head of the little crowd, hair pointed in different directions, scarf down to his knees, a vodka bottle poking out of the deep pockets of his sailor's coat. He is a member of what in another context might be a somewhat marginal profession, an architectural and urban historian. But here, he has developed a slightly cult-like following as the guardian spirit of old Moscow. Mozhaev and his friends have started salvaging buildings from the wrecking ball. They pick it in front of wooden houses under threat, try to raise enough fuss that developers back off. But these victories are few and far between. Over several years, they have saved 3 buildings out of 3,000. Mozhaev is young, a 30-something, but his voice is full of cracks and sandpaper tones, like the walls of old Moscow itself. He takes out his bottle and says, "We're here to stay awake, to this building, to old Moscow. All these buildings are set to be destroyed." Mozhaev and his followers put on the Pinocchio-like masks they wear for this lament and begin to howl into the air like professional mourners at a funeral. "How long will you keep on destroying our city?" they cry. "Soon there will be nothing, nothing left." The little scene will be posted online. He turns, and we follow him under an arch and into the last of the older, tender Moscow, the web of little lanes, courtyards, and alleyways that spreads in a horizontal swirl between the great trunks of the gargantuan Stalin-era avenues. We pass through narrow arches and into suddenly spacious courtyards where teens play ice hockey on a skating rink poured between the houses. The light is different here, darker and softer, the fresh snow reflecting back the remains of the day to underlight the crumbling lions and angels stuccoed onto buildings. Everything here is scuffed, textured, tawny, ragged, and lived in. Here is the Moscow that existed before the Soviet experiment. Back in the 18th and 19th centuries, St. Petersburg was the capital, the city of power, regime, order. Moscow was a backwater, the holiday city where you could sleep in late and spend the day in your pyjamas. Here we find places with names like Krivokolenia, the street of the crooked knee, and Patapovsky, a word that falls like snowflakes in the mouth. But my favourite of all is Petinskaya. In English, the Street of All Fridays. There is no pomposity on the Street of All Fridays. It is full of little two-storey 19th-century mini-mansions, leaning higgledy-piggledy on each other like happy drunk friends singing on their way home to a warm bed. In every courtyard there is a bar, some little place with cheap vodka and smoky rooms. Everything about the street says, "Let's drink, have a chat, swap stories. I haven't seen you for so long. I haven't been myself for so long." "To anyone familiar with Prague, or London, or Rome, or Edinburgh," says Mozhaev as we walk, "these old Moscow courtyards are probably of little architectural significance. I'm not even sure they qualify as beautiful. But in contrast to the new Moscow with its endless imitations, this world is real." On the corner of Pokrovka, 3 plump women who look like schoolteachers or doctors patrol an Art Nouveau block of flats, surrounded by their Labradors. They squint aggressively as we approach, then relax and greet Mozhaev when they see him. These little vigilante gangs have become common in Moscow, protecting not from burglars but from developers who send arsonists to set buildings ablaze, then use the fire as an excuse to evict homeowners by claiming the houses are now fire hazards. The motivation is great. Property prices rose by over 400% in the first decade after 2000. We follow Mozhaev as he climbs into the remains of a broken wooden mansion, recently gutted by one of these mysterious fires. In the palace, the snow wafts through the burnt-out roofs, into rooms with sky-blue wallpaper and the remains of an ancient fireplace, now hung with icicles. Under open boards beneath our feet, we can see tramps sleeping in the basement. Mozhaev begins to tell the story of the building, who lived here and who did what. His little audience listens closely. There is something almost hallucinogenic about his storytelling. The roof on the house seems to grow back. You can feel the fire burning in the hearth and hear the footsteps of lost aristocracy and the gossip of their servants, then see how the house was taken over by communists in 1917, hear the shots when the original owners were executed, and see the little palace be converted into a communal flat where everyone was arrested during Stalin's terror. "Old walls and doors know something we can't understand," Mozhaev wrote in one of his essays. "The true nature of time. The drama of human lives is written in the buildings. We will be gone. Only places remain. There isn't a building that we walk past that wasn't the scene of execution squads, betrayals, mass murders. The most gentle courtyards reveal the most awful secrets. Whenever 21st century Russian culture looks for a foundation it can build itself from, healthy and happy, it finds the floor gives way and buries it in soil and blood. Mazhaev's walks become more than just about architecture, but about the way the whole society is governed. The glossy Moscow magazines that would never dare touch big politics instead talk about urban policy as a metaphor. Give us back our city, they write, and through that express their much more general discontent. It's well into the night as Mazhaev and I loop back towards Gnitnikovsky. The walk is over. Mazhaev grabs a gypsy cab home. I'd always assumed he lived somewhere in the alleyways of old Moscow. Instead, the car drives him deep into the suburbs, right to the final, outermost ring road encircling Moscow. Mazhaev's unkempt 20-storey 1980s block is right by the ring road's edge. His home was knocked down a few years ago, replaced with high-rises. He is an émigré. You grow up sure that everything will always be the same. House, trees, parents, he will write later in another essay. When my parents died, I could remember them through the building that we lived in. Buildings aren't so much about recollecting time as about the victory over time. After the cold outside, his block is overheated, and he is sweating heavily by the time he reaches his own floor. He tries to be quiet as he enters the flat. His wife and children are asleep. Outside, high-rises merge with the darkness. Only the flocks of cranes still glimmer and swing around construction sites, working through the night, like catching a theatre set between the acts. In the distance, the thickest flock surrounds the ever-in-construction Federation Tower, the central skyscraper of Moscow City, Russia's rebuttal to La Défense and Canary Wharf, but built higher, faster, and with shoulder-barging get-out-of-my-way insistence near the middle of the capital, so much taller and bigger than anything in the city that it redefines its dimensions, its very idea of height and size. It's time for Russia to get up off its knees, the president's favourite soundbite goes, and the Federation Tower rises like the folklore warriors of Russian stories, growing not by days, but by the hour. There's a cry as Mazhaev's newborn starts sobbing in his cot. He lifts the baby up, rocks him up and down to stop the mewling. He's only a few months old and mixed race. Mazhaev's wife is from Cuba. Her parents were communists who moved to Moscow in Soviet times expecting a utopia. All three of Mazhaev's kids are black. The only black kids the other kids around here have ever met. They get smacked about, called nasty names. Mazhaev has been thinking about emigrating for them to have a normal life. Montenegro, he thinks to himself. He's always liked the sound of the word Montenegro. Or London. Or maybe further.
Tomorrow, Peter Pomerantsev reflects on the fractured nature of Russia. Justin Salinger was reading Nothing is True and Everything is Possible. Our book of the week is abridged by Robin Brooks and produced by Kirstine Cameron.
Did your mother not tell you never to put another person in danger?
Yes, but I had no money. Nowhere else to go.
Four extraordinary stories.
I'm probably the tallest girl you've ever seen. I'm probably the tallest girl in the whole wide world that ever there was.
A journey, a regret, a memory, and a secret.
There's much about me that you have yet to discover.
Drama over on BBC Radio 4 Extra. Next Tuesday to Friday at 11:15 and again in the evening at 9:15.